And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, today I'd like to start by talking about the really enormous change in the American electoral system. We used to have one president, and now apparently we have a dual presidency.
We have three, Jake.
A triple?
Yeah.
Oh, you're counting the guy who actually has the office?
Yes.
Ah, well, okay. All right, fair enough. So what do you think about this triple header? And by the way, one of them isn't even a native-born American.
That's right. Is not qualified to be to be a office holder.
Yeah. Well, not he could be an office holder, but not president.
President or vice president. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think we remarked last week that the current president, who has just under a month to go in his presidency, has pretty much shrunk from the stage or disappeared from the stage. Now, there are things that he's working on in the background. We do know he was in Angola. He's been in touch with leaders in Europe on certain things.
Does it matter? He can't promise anything because nobody's going to pay any attention to his promise because they know Trump will undo it.
No. Yeah. But, there's no visible presence there.
He has the bully pulpit, which he doesn't use.
Right. And he's never really figured out how to use it.
Yeah.
That wasn't his strong point. But there was an article in Politico this week of Trump's team of advisors, his election team. And one of the points they made was that Trump is a master of visibility, of the visuals. And what captures people's attention what it gives them perceptions of rather than necessarily the reality. So we have the current office holder who is virtually invisible. We have the incoming president who's also, is continuing to his methodology of it doesn't matter what you say about me as long as you're talking about me, and doing outrageous things and making outrageous appointments and stuff like that.
But
and
they're not outrageous from his point of view. They're quite normal from his point of view.
Well, yeah, abnormality is the new normal.
Yeah.
That's the 1984 thing. And then we have what he's been getting trolled on, that Trump is really the vice president and Elon Musk is the president. And Musk is the one that's leading the charge on everything. He's out there. He's made great use of his financially disastrous purchase of Twitter, but it doesn't matter. He's so rich that he lost $22 billion is, just a write-off for him. And, of course, these things coincided or came together this week on the extension of the debt or on the budget issues, that whether the government would have to begin shutting down or not. And we had all financial, all budget matters have to start in the House of Representatives according to the Constitution.
But they never do.
Well, it's always a combination, but in fact, the bills have to originate there. And so we have the current Speaker of the House, who's a real diminished person in all of this. He's Charlie McCarthy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he put together a deal with the with Chuck Schumer and the White House, acting behind the scenes, and went to a vote and didn't do very well. It got knocked down. They needed a two-thirds vote because they didn't go through the normal committee process. And it didn't come anywhere near there.
Wait, I don't think he got the majority.
It went down because it went down. Yeah. 38 Republicans voted against that deal. A government funding bill. Remember, this is just to fund the bills that have been incurred to date.
This is to sign the checks,
right,
to pay for the stuff they've already bought and used.
Right. And then,
which they authorized before they bought them and used them.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are the responsible business people who know how to run economies who refuse to pay the bills for the things that they've done. That they don't say. They never put it that way.
But I don't want to say to be fair to him, but to be accurate with him, he's got part of his caucus that, like Chip Roy in Texas, and I think Tom Massey in Kentucky, who genuinely believe that the government should do nothing except, you know, tax cuts for the wealthy. But everything else, the Ronald Reaganism, the government is the problem. It's not the solution.
These people are the faction of the Republican Party who are anarchists. These are libertarians. They don't believe in government. They are united in certain policies with the fascist element led by Trump, MAGA. But MAGA requires a government. MAGA requires a strong government. The Republicans are split in that way between the fascists and the anarchists.
Well, and the MAGA requires money so that the oligarchs can steal or try to steal it.
But they also need money because in order to hold the allegiance of some working class people, they have to give them something, and that costs money.
Yeah. So we have that. And so then they tried, they came out with another bill, and that one went down. The Democrats wouldn't go on it. Now, let me get back to the first bill. It looked like, because it had been a compromise, all the political leaders had signed off on it that are in current office. And we had President Musk and his, Batman Musk and Robin Vivek came out and said, no, you can't have this. This is, it's 1,500 pages, and it's loaded with the same stuff that the MAGA voters didn't like. And, of course, some of that stuff was like relief for hurricane victims and a farm bill to help the farmers that they've been screwing, to keep the farmers in line so when they screw them, they give them enough to keep them voting for themselves. Things like the bridge in Baltimore and lies came out of Musk's mouth.
The bridge in Baltimore, by the way, is not just a bridge. The Baltimore, the way it is now, it's blocking the operations of the Baltimore Harbor, and that's where all the cars come from. They come into the Baltimore Harbor.
Plus, all the commerce that goes up and down the East Coast by truck.
Yeah.
My family, right after the bridge collapse, had to go to outside of Washington for a family event, and the traffic was horrendous because everything was going, instead of having two paths, that one bridge was out.
Yeah.
So it took us 4.5 hours to go from Philly to Washington.
So these businessmen who are experts in the economy, led by a president who's a genius businessman, didn't want that bridge restored because of what? I don't know what.
And other things, like Musk got out and said that they're going to raise the congressional salary from 174 to 243.
He said it was going to go up by 40%.
Yeah, that was a lie.
Yeah.
It was going to go up by less than
4%, and it was going to track the cost of living.
Right, and it's the first raise that they've had in a good number of years.
Right.
And the reason...
And Musk doesn't need a raise.
Right. It was either a deliberate lie or shows how he doesn't understand what the bills say, because the 40% would have been what the cost of living raises would have made the salary of a congressman had the Congress not been rejecting those raises over all these years.
Right.
He said there's billions of dollars for the football stadium in Washington, D.C. There wasn't a nickel in that. That all they did was they transferred the authority back to the D.C. Council, so D.C. could do whatever they needed to do in order to try to keep the former Redskins, now the Commanders, in town. And you can debate.
But without giving them any money.
No money. No money in that.
Yeah.
And there were a number of other things like that that he just either plain lied about or whatever. But he's been the front man on all these things. So then they came back. He said, we want a clean bill except for three things. We want to get rid of the debt ceiling. We want to we'll give the hurricane victims their $100 billion and the farmers $10 billion. And he posted pictures of the original bill, the 1,500 pages versus the 20-page bill that they had. Again, a visual effect. And
Vivek produced a 75-word bill.
Yeah.
One page.
Yeah. And they...
If you're not going to do anything, you don't need a lot of words.
Right. Now, the Democrats realized that by raising or by eliminating the debt ceiling, that gave Trump, when he gets, when he takes the oath of office, the ability to give all these tax cuts to his billionaire friends and just blow the budget apart, and it takes away any leverage they have in the Senate to constrain that. Now they're still going to be able to do a lot of this through what's called reconciliation, because you don't need 60 votes on reconciliation; you just need a majority. But still, so the Democrats wouldn't go for bill number two, and that failed. And the Democrats said, look, you made a deal with us, Speaker Johnson. Speaker, President, whatever you want to call him, Musk, didn't negotiate with us. So we're not going to let that bill go through. And finally, they came up with a slightly amended type of bill, which did not raise did not eliminate the debt ceiling. And everybody's saying, well, we want to go home for Christmas. Went home, voted yay, and went home for Christmas, except for the anarchist contingent. And
Bernie Sanders.
And Bernie Sanders, 11 people in the Senate.
Yeah.
Mostly the anarchists in the Senate, the Josh Hawleys,
mm-hmm.
the Mike Lees, the Johnsons from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little surprised that Mitt Romney, and maybe it was just his final vote, and he was one of the 11 there. So we now have a deal that funds the government until a few more months down the road.
March.
Yeah, until they have to negotiate again over the new proposed budget and tax system and what have you.
So, well, it doesn't give Trump what he wanted, because he wanted to be able to say,
right,
we're going to raise taxes on you, but it's Biden's fault because he removed the debt limit. And the Democrats would presumably say, but what do you mean he removed it? You removed it. No, but he was the president. He didn't have it. It's Biden's
right.
fault. Well, he doesn't have that anymore. He has it. It's his.
He's got to own it.
Yeah.
And they tried. The Republicans tried to say, this is the Democrats' fault for shutting down the government. We came up with a bill, and it didn't work. It didn't work. It was interesting that Musk, had to beat us a retreat and issue a statement saying, it's not everything we wanted, but it's much better than what we would have had, type of thing. But it's a defeat for him to start off with. And
the point is, it's a defeat caused by the disaffection, by the split, the real split in the Republican Party.
Right.
And it's important to point out that the Republican Party is split. And it's not split between progressive and reactionary elements. It's split between reactionary and ultra-reactionary. It's split between, in a word, between libertarians who don't believe that there should be a government except for those functions that benefit their specific personal interests, and fascists who need a government, who use a government to benefit basically the same interests. But it's a different approach to how to benefit the corporate interests.
Right.
They're split on that. And that's going to be a continuous split because it's an ideological split in the next 2 years and maybe beyond, but certainly in the next 2 years. The question is, how are the Democrats going to respond to that? Are they going to be a loyal opposition or are they going to be an opposition? Are they going to just say, well, we'll try to cross the aisle where we can? Or will they say, we have a different vision of life. We have a different vision of America. We're going to stand up for it. And we're going to point out that what the Republicans do, whether it's the fascist wing or the anarchist wing, is bad for people in America. I don't see that the Democrats have the leadership to do that, but I don't see why they would be relevant if they didn't do that.
Well, that was the argument of the article you sent me, Jamil Bowie from the New York Times.
Yes.
That an opposition's business is to oppose.
Yeah.
And that the Democrats weren't showing that kind of muscle, so to speak. And the split in the Democratic Party is over their vision and how they've been characterized by the visuals that the Musks of this world are able and the Trumps are able to produce. There was an interesting article in Politico this week from the Trump election team. And one of the things that they talked about was how well Donald Trump was able to use visual media to project his image and his ideas and his thoughts, so that imprints, particularly when you repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it, and what Democrats are. And they were, you know, if the Democrats' image is we're going to give teenagers, transsexual teenagers, sex change operations or prisoners sex change operations, they're not going to get very far on things, even though that's such a small factor in the overall issues in America in terms of how many people it affects and how much money is involved, that type of thing. But it got blown up as to be the primary thing. The Democrats have a job to, you know, first they have to get their own house in order, and secondly they have to be able to show what their new house looks like.
You're asking the Democrats to do something that the Democratic Party is not set up to do, which is to be a party, a political party in the sense of a European 20th century party that has members that have a say in the policies of the party. Democratic Party nor the Republican Party are set up that way. There's no mechanism for a membership control of either one of these electoral parties. The party's policy is controlled by whoever manages to win control of the nomination for whatever the candidate, for whatever the office that's being contested is. And with Citizens United, that means that the parties, both of them, willy-nilly, inevitably, have to be dominated by whoever has the money.
Right.
That's not a democratic procedure. That means that the party itself is no longer a leading element. The party is merely an electoral vehicle. Politics is, therefore, the party only plays a narrow and secondary role in actual politics. The actual politics is played outside the electoral process through the mobilization of millions of people. Whoever can do that then can dominate the electoral rolls. Whoever can't do that can't overcome not having done that because he or she dominates the electoral roll, because there won't be enough people to vote on the electoral roll because they won't have been motivated by the actual politics of the country.
Well, that's what the Republicans have been doing for 40 years or so.
That's right.
Through Rupert Murdoch, through Rush Limbaugh, through these various organizations that the Koch brothers have set up.
Yeah.
And
by the way, how do they say they learned how to do it? They say they learned how to do it by copying the left.
Yeah. Saul Alinsky?
The communists. I mean, the socialists, the communists, they're the ones who led mass movements that led to the New Deal. It's that famous quote of Roosevelt when he met with Sidney Hillman. Remember? Yeah. Sidney, you've convinced me, not go out and make me do it?
Right.
That's how you do it.
Bottom-up politics.
Bottom-up politics. People who don't want to do bottom-up politics should retire and stick to stamp collecting.
Yeah. The Biden people described that, you know, they said we build the country from the middle out and the bottom up, but it didn't work that way.
No, and Obama, as soon as he got elected, dissolved the mass movement that he had organized.
Yeah. Yeah. And he dissolved Howard Dean.
And he dissolved Howard Dean. And the Clintons have never had the interest in the mass movement. The entire existing old guard of the Democratic Party fundamentally repudiates the idea that you have to have a mass movement. Well, in that case, you've set the stage for the people who have the money and the interest and the will to create a mass movement. And that so far, it's been the right wing. And now the fascist part of the right wing.
Or a charismatic leader or whatever.
Yeah.
But
Trump is hardly a charismatic leader. You know, if Trump didn't get all the free publicity that the Murdochs and other and CNN striving for profitability gave him, he would not be considered a charismatic leader.
But he knew how to do it.
He knew how to do it. That's right. He knew how to do it. But also he had Murdoch in his back pocket, and Murdoch had a big megaphone. And then CNN jumped in to try to get part of that audience. And then the norm of capitalist economics followed. And the people who make their living by having a big audience followed. And all of a sudden, they gave him what people who studied it said was, in 2016, $3 billion worth of free publicity. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a lot of publicity.
Yeah.
You've got to do a lot of organizing to offset that. But you got to do it.
Yeah, and he continues to get that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the car wreck that nobody can avoid slowing down and looking at.
Well, it's the emperor's new clothes, really. He's naked. Point that out. That's the task of the left. The Democrats are, you know, deathly afraid of standing up for the kinds of things that was in the New Deal days was commonplace. Public housing, public education, not enhanced charter schools. Enhanced charter schools are the opposite of what the country needs. Housing isn't what the country needs. Public affordable housing is what the country needs. The Democrats don't stand for that. There's no, where is the program with the urgency of the Manhattan Project for housing? Whereas the need for housing has the urgency that atomic energy needed, right?
Right. Now, Harris did talk about building affordable housing, but it was not well formulated, and it was not well presented, and it was too little too late. Nobody had been talking about this idea or percolating this idea up for years and years. It just sort of
exactly. A guy who is not in politics ran as a kind of a joke about 6 years ago in New York City for mayor.
Yeah.
He had one slogan, the rent's too damn high.
Yeah. Yeah.
He got a lot of support. He had no organization. He came out of nowhere. He was just a guy from Harlem. The rents, he had a good slogan, the rent's too damn high. He didn't even have a program, but you knew what he meant, and people supported it.
Exactly. And in terms of communications, you know, I always come back to messaging and communications. It was a succinct message. It accurately pointed out the issue that was in front of people, and he repeated it and repeated it and repeated it. In this election, one of the things I noticed that we had never seen before were billboards and different kinds of lawn signs, and particularly the Trump people did. And again, succinct, make housing affordable again. And then it would switch to make groceries affordable again. Just four words. You could read it as you flew by at 60 miles an hour.
Right. Like the old Burma shave heads.
Yeah. They had these lawn signs. Trump safety, Harris crime.
Right.
You know,
right.
You probably saw those up where you were.
You can still see them.
Yeah. Trump lower taxes, Harris more taxes.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. Instead of having these long dialogue type of stuff, you know, Trump freedom, Harris, you know, communist, whatever. If you remember the guy that stopped when we were coming from breakfast together, and you know, and we were holding a Harris sign that you would give, you know, a lawn sign that you would given us to give to some people. He actually stopped his car and yelled, "Harris is a communist," you know.
Yeah.
Where do they get that idea?
I'll tell you, they get it in two ways. They get it in one way because the enemies of Harris call her a communist, and the friends of communism don't point out what communism really is. So it's easy to take someone who's not as being that. Because to call Harris a communist also insults communists.
and it, you know, but it's a message that's repeated on X and Truth Social and the Murdoch press and whatever.
Right.
By the way, I don't know, did we talk last week about the crisis in the Murdoch family?
No, we didn't really, and we're not going to this week because we're almost finished.
Yeah.
And that's already very interesting and very important.
That could be the most important thing. A judge in Nevada may be changing America's political future.
Yeah.
But anyway, this coming week is Hanukkah. It's Christmas. I believe we've passed Festivus. This weekend is the first weekend of winter.
We had the shortest day of the year.
The shortest day of the year. My wife would like to have been at Stonehenge to watch the sunrise.
It was Frank Zappa's birthday.
Well, talk about chaos. you know, and sharp messaging.
Right.
Frank Zappa knew how to do that.
Right.
Yeah. And if our listeners aren't sure of who Frank Zappa is...
look it up. We're not going to tell you.
Look him up. We're not going to tell you. So next week, we're going to be prepping for the new year and with what that brings. Particularly the new administration. I expect by that time to have informal meeting with Matt Cartwright, and I might have some new data, new information there. We don't know.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see what you do. We'll look for it and see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.